It's not Hampshire, it's Hampshire. It's not Yorkshire, it's Yorkshire.
Yorkshire. That's what I just said.
No, sure, Yorkshire.
That's what I said, Yorkshire.
No, sure, not Shire,
That's what I
sure.
said. I
Like
said Shire.
the old singer, sure. Not Shire.
Shire.
No, you're not in fucking Bilbo Baggins land. Sure,
York.
Yorkshire, sure.
Shire.
No.
Hey, what's up, guys? On this episode of Drugs and Stuff, we've got a bunch of steroids in the news, including racehorses and Osterine, and we've got a bunch of listener questions. We're going to get to all that right now. Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Guys, our programming is presented by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES. That's all down in the description below. That helps to support our network, and it gives you a great deal on some awesome supplements. Dave Crossland, good to see you again, brother. Hopefully we can keep you awake here. Was that a yawn? Did I just see a yawn?
I don't know what's going on with me at the moment. This doing nothing seems to be extremely tiring.
Yeah. Well, I've got some stuff to keep you awake for the next hour. We have a couple questions that we are going to ask from listeners. But to start us out, Dave, we have steroids in the news. I love doing that. No, we do. We've got some fun stories here today. Interesting stories.
Okay.
I thought this one was the most interesting I want to start with. So I don't know what this means, a quarter horse trainer. The word quarter horse trainer. I don't know what that means.
I don't
but it's
know.
Like a quarter
does
mile.
That mean he, does that mean he only trains one quarter of the horse? Is he responsible for like the left back leg?
Apparently, if that is the case, I think so, because they're showing a picture of with an injection going into this horse. Anyway, though, quarter horse trainer Bobby Martinez, who trained winners of more than $12.9 million. Has been handed a potential 34-year suspension and fines up to $480,000 after the New Mexican Racing Commission said that he had eight possible tests for a class one substance. Now, get this. This ruling on March 31st, were all for Osterine, which goes by the name MK2866. This guy was giving Osterine to horses. Ooh, Carl Lenore just chimed in. He says quarter mile. So that's a quarter mile is what he's talking about there. But yeah, so
it's
this guy
basically sprint track for a in horse terms, yeah. I would assume.
So we have a sprinting horse that is on Osterine. I didn't realize. I mean, I shouldn't be surprised. Osterine is a drug that they're giving to horses now.
Did he? Do you think he thought that because it was what it was, i.e., a SARM, that they wouldn't test for it? Do you think it was a way of getting around potential doping testing?
That's even a better question, because I was surprised to begin with that that they were able to find a positive on it. I didn't realize they were testing for Osterine in horses. You know,
I wouldn't have thought. I think we've touched on this before. They test for cocaine in horses.
You mentioned that. Yeah.
Mm. I'm not so sure it's as looked for in the sprint tracks that he's operating in, but it's looked for in mainstay horse racing over here is cocaine, definitely.
It says it wouldn't be the first time Osterine has been discovered in connection with racehorses. In September 2019, the Emirates Racing Authority issued a press release detailing an inspection of the stables of Rasht something. I can't pronounce that word.
I can't. I know that was a bad one coming.
it was the name of a place. I'm not even going to try. But they said that when the authorities had searched this place, Osterine, among nine substances, was discovered there in their medication room, including a product called Oxygen, which was found to contain strychnine. Now this is, I mean, this is some, this is, I guess this is a thing, dude. They're using Osterine in horses now.
No, horse doping's been around for a very, very long time. So I suppose, yeah. You know, if I mean, we see animal studies all the time in the development of SARMs and drugs anyway, don't we? I mean, generally rat studies, but we see them. So it
Right.
isn't, and a lot of veterinary drugs are cross usage with females. I mean, you can use antihistamines on your animals if they have allergic reactions. So it stands to reason that it would pass the other way.
It makes sense too. Carl chimes
Yes.
in once more and he says, muscle is critical. You have to think, think of a sprinter. I mean, think of, sprinters are just, they're people that are just bound with a lot. I mean, as far as athletes go, like running athletes, you're not going to find more muscle on a runner than you will on a sprinter.
No, I mean, quite some of them look like they could step on a bodybuilding stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not surprising in any way, shape, or form. I'd never considered SARMs being used in horse racing, but I mean, the thing is, people have to realize is that when you test for doping, you have to test for the drug.
Yeah,
You don't do a test and it suddenly comes back and says, "Oh, look, there's this, and this in it." What it does is you have to look for the substances when you test for them. So if SARMs weren't on the radar in horse doping, there's no reason why for a period of time they were probably getting away with using them. And it's only, as it's come to light that those drugs have been used in racing that they've now started to look for them more actively.
That makes sense. And I should mention, Carl is from Superhuman Radio. Anybody who wants to check him out, he's got a great show. He's been with us over here before. He also threw in that TaylorMade Compounding had all their finished products seized last month due to making products form Medivet that were banned for racehorses. So.
We have a, well, we had, I don't know if it's still in existence now, I think it is. We had a tailor-made UGL over here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was a UGL called tailor-made. I can't remember if they've been busted and they're still going or if they've been busted and they've stopped.
Ooh.
But for some reason, my head is saying they've been busted at some point, but I don't know why.
Jeff Schultz had a question for us here at the show. He said, "Is Dave a sprinter?"
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I switched from marathon running to sprinting. Bloody hell, I struggle to run a bath, let alone anything else.
Oh, man. All
Oh,
right.
God. I was sprinting on Sunday for my chocolate eggs. That was definitely, I moved fast for them before my daughter tried to get them.
Oh.
That's about the fastest you'll see me move if there's food involved.
Did you guys do like a whole egg hunt and stuff at your house?
Yeah, I hunted by walking from the kitchen to the dining room and taking it off the sideboard. Yes, that's about as far as my hunt went. Something very, very wrong in the world if I am running.
Oh man. I found this
I
to be.
actually
Oh, go
don't
ahead.
think I could run to save my life.
Oh, Dave, really?
I think if my life was in danger and it involved running, I would accept that I was going to die and just stand there and let it happen. I
Oh my
don't think
gosh.
I'd run.
We got to change that in 2020. I think by the end of 2020, I want to do a video with you, Dave, just at least like doing a light jog around the block. How's that sound?
That
No?
is how opposed I am to running.
So we've talked in the past about how if the authorities find other drugs, a lot of times they don't even really prosecute against steroids. You've mentioned that previously. This is an interesting one. It just kind of illustrated that point. This is from the Daily Register. I'm not sure where this is from exactly. I could find out. Man found unconscious, charged with drug crimes. So get this. 33-year-old man Devin Mann found unconscious in a vehicle Friday morning, April 10th, is facing drug crimes in it says Gainesville Police Department. So it turns out that he was in and out of consciousness. What did they find here? He was taken back to an ambulance to the North Texas Medical Center. He had 96.3 grams of methamphetamine, 8/10 of a gram of marijuana, half a gram of heroin, and a 10-milliliter bottle of anabolic steroids. What kind of stack is that, Dave?
That's a good one, that, definitely.
That's
I think they call that the junkie stack.
the dude. What was he even doing with, like, if you have all that meth and heroin And weed, I mean, the weed, they're okay. I get that. You know, a lot of bodybuilders smoke weed, help their appetite. Guys are smoking before they train. In fact, Dave, I think it's more popular than ever now. But what are you doing with a bottle of steroids as a meth addict? I don't get that.
I'm not so sure with meth. What we have seen in the UK is heroin addicts turn into steroids.
For what?
Because when they stop or they start to reduce their heroin intake, or they are become very conscious that they look like heroin addicts.
You're kidding.
And obviously your typical heroin addict is going to look quite slim, quite emaciated, quite lean.
Yeah.
And as a result, what we've seen is them using steroids to look bigger. So they don't. Now we saw this quite a lot in through the needle exchanges, where previous heroin users who had successfully either stopped heroin use or reduced their heroin use were then turning to steroids to increase their mass so that they no longer looked like a heroin user.
Wow, okay.
And obviously they're always familiar with injecting. That isn't an issue to them. They don't have any concerns with injecting drugs. So, there was quite a lot, and it wasn't just a few isolated things. There was quite a trend of heroin users moving to steroids to increase their muscle mass so they no longer had the appearance of a heroin user.
Interesting.
And obviously there's a lot of stigma associated with that look. So they were turning to steroids to try and create a less drug user appearance.
No kidding, man.
The original reports came on from people that had stopped using heroin and wanted to regain muscle mass and start looking like a normal sort of active member. But I believe there's been some element of crossover where people still in some form of heroin use have used steroids to try and counteract the physical effects that heroin has on their physical mass.
Huh. Interesting. Huh. I wouldn't have thought so.
Could be that. Could be just the fact that he's selling shit. None of them seem particularly high doses. I'm not that familiar, but apart from the meth, how much was the meth?
Oh, it was a lot. Let me scroll back up here. 96.3 grams. I imagine that's a lot.
That's decent. Wow. Yeah.
What is that? Delivery. He's arrested and charged with manufactured delivery of a controlled substance, penalty group one, for more than 4 grams and less than 200 grams. This is a first degree felony. And then he's also charged with possession of a controlled substance, group one, less than a gram. It's a state jail penalty. That's for the heroin. And then possession of marijuana, less than 2 ounces. That's a Class B misdemeanor. And public intoxication, a Class C misdemeanor. No mention of charges for the 10 milliliter bottle of steroids.
It's personal, obviously. You're not going to get a supply charge on that in a million years.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they bothered with the marijuana, considering the current trend within the U.S., towards marijuana.
Yeah.
I mean, what people seem to forget about law enforcement is law enforcement have budgets the same as anybody else. They have to show effective cost management when it comes to law enforcement, policing and cases and such like that. So as a result, they generally will focus on the charges that are going to give them the biggest bang for the buck and the greatest return.
That makes sense.
Be that either in a custodial return, in that the person spends a decent amount of time in custody, or in a what over here we regard as a POCA, which is a proceeds of crime order, where they can charge that person a financial amount that they have to pay in relative to the crime they've committed. So, you know, somebody with one bottle of steroids has no pocket viability at all and no real criminal viability at all. So it's just not worth prosecuting, whereas someone with 900 grams of meth is obviously, you know, not only can you prove that they've got financial income from the drugs and therefore you can sting them with a monetary fine, you're also going to get a good custodial response for that. So the money spent on that investigation would be deemed as being cost effective.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Scottish law have it. They use the term very often of not in the interest of the public purse. And that can often have cases dismissed because the punishment for the crime does not fit the cost of prosecuting the individual. So, you know, that, people forget that that does play in. Where those sort of go out the window is where it's a socially sensitive crime. So they will prosecute people for politically sensitive or socially sensitive crimes, even if the crime or the punishment isn't really going to reflect the cost of doing it, because it's viewed as socially impacting or politically impacting if there's a particular sensitive subject at the time. So you'll find if, say, a state has a big social problem with a certain element of crime, might be theft of vehicles. So there's been a real high spate of theft of vehicles. Socially, the media is very aware of this. People are very aware of this. There's a lot of public outcry against theft from vehicles. And so as a result, you'll find someone committing that offence will get dealt with much more harshly and much more likely to receive a stiff penalty and quick and rapid prosecution, because people are so much aware of that crime going on in that area and they feel it needs to be stamped out.
That makes sense. Yeah, that
So these are
does.
sort of driving factors you see behind policing of crimes. It is, you know, financial reward, criminal penalty, or social or political pressure to deal with the problem.
Okay. I saw, there were a bunch of other news articles. Some of them we can get to on the next episode. Another report about Instagram. You remember before we did our episode about the shocking reality, Dave, that steroids are being sold on social media. It is happening. It's happening all around us. They say, here's another article bringing this to light. Analytics by The Times found potent steroids for sale simply by searching specific brand names, even by entering the word steroids into the search bar. One seller on Instagram had more than 4,000 followers and regularly posted pictures of pills and injectable liquids on offer, inviting users to message them to buy. Other offers offered Dianabol or Trenbolone. They said that there was 31,000 posts mentioning Dianabol alone.
Wouldn't surprise me in the slightest.
Yeah, no, me either. Me either. But they make it sound like it's shocking news, you know?
I mean, we know social platforms have been used for steroid advice, drug advice, sale of drugs for well, years. You know, it's nothing new. You know, in the same way, social media platforms are used to sell porn and sex and OnlyFans and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's anything like that that can advertise to the masses will get diverted to, you know, used in some form of potentially criminal activity. And I only say criminal activity because the fact that in most countries the sale of steroids is illegal, not in all, but in most.
Looking at one more news story here. This is from the BBC News, and I have to feel like this is maybe anti-steroid. I don't know if I want to use their propaganda, but definitely a political stance or to take against steroids here. They say that a man died after having taken steroids to keep fit in the gym. 38-year-old man died after using steroids to help him keep fit in the gym. His name was Elvis Aaron Presley O'Brien in Hampshire. Are you familiar with Hampshire?
I'm sure.
Hampshire. Okay.
Yeah.
Died in the hospital early hours of, this is back last year, September 21st, after falling ill overnight. Post-mortem examination did not find a cause of death, but found he had taken anabolic steroids, what is it? Drostanolone,
Dostoyevsky. Yeah, mask.
and had heart enlargement. Coroner recorded an open verdict. So they don't, I mean, they don't have a reason here, but they are saying he was on steroids. I mean, obviously this is super unfortunate that somebody, passed away. But it does, the way they put this, they're saying that it was the gear. They don't have any other,
Well, You know, you get these, and you'll very often get a huge backlash from the user community. Oh, yeah, obviously it's the steroids, because they blame steroids for everything.
Yeah.
And I sort of see the point with that. But at the same time, I mean, and there is no evidence to suggest anything in this case, because it's been recorded as an open verdict. So, but you would suspect that if you had an enlarged heart and it was significantly enlarged, which they don't say whether it was or not, cause of death would potentially be heart related. But at the same time, I would have thought they would have recorded that as a heart attack if so. So
yeah.
Do steroids kill people? Yes. Yes, and you're naive if you don't think that is the case. There are plenty of people that have passed because they used steroids and would be alive if they didn't.
Yeah.
Do they die in an overdose scenario? No, not at all. That is not the case, but they do cause health implications that can cause fatalities, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Are steroids the cause of this person's death? Probably not. Did they play a role in his demise? Potentially. You know, and I think that's where it gets a bit grey and murky for a lot of people, is there are people who have died that would potentially still be alive if they hadn't used gear because of heart enlargement or heart malformation or arterial fibrillation caused by that or the other. And I think now you've got to be pretty stupid to say that steroids are never cold, they killed anybody. And I mean, I spent a long time saying that.
Did you?
I genuinely did. Yeah, a long time saying that. And then you start to look at it and just go, you know what? No, we're not going to take an injection, a test, and drop down dead. It's highly unlikely that's ever going to happen unless you had some sort of weird shock reaction. But the fact remains that the side effects of steroid causing high blood pressure, causing narrowing of the arteries, causing heart fall thickening, can put you in a situation where you can pass.
Yeah.
And a vast majority would be recorded as a heart attack, though there will be others that have more complicated health problems because of the concoction of drugs they were using. But there is no denying that steroid uses will contribute to people's deaths, without a doubt. But at the same time, the media love to hang these things on steroid use, even when they're not. So we get an over prosecution of steroids when it comes to people dying. On one sense, but the result of that is the user community gets overly defensive.
Yeah, I could see that.
In regards to, well, no, people don't die of steroids. You know, we've had, there are no doubt usage deaths, and you know, there are no doubt deaths caused by diuretics. There are no doubt heart attacks caused by steroid uses. It's ridiculous to consider that that's not the case. But because media over sensationalizes deaths,
yeah,
user community counter-reacts that by playing it down far too much. And the truth is that the balance in the middle with that.
Yeah, I think a big take-home message maybe is for some of, I feel like at a certain age, you start to understand your mortality. But maybe for some of the younger people that are watching or listening right now, just to recognize that, you know what, it can happen to all of us. Age isn't necessarily a discriminating factor. It can be. But if you were, you know, like this 38-year-old guy, maybe he did have some sort of predisposition. And maybe if he had, we don't know, but maybe if he looked at his health a little closer and had a better understanding of what was going on, there's a chance that he could have avoided this. I just think that statistically, you know, if steroids do increase risks of health issues, that means that there's at least somebody out there that's watching this or listening to this right now that could potentially die with an impact of steroids being, you know, part of that. So I just want to say, you know, as we always preach, right? Continue to monitor your health, do your lab work, get an EKG, all that stuff, you know, check your blood sugar, everything you can do, because none of us are impervious, you know, to this. So, and I know that's your big message too, Dave.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to sit here and preach about, oh, steroids are going to kill you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are people that are no longer alive because of their usage patterns.
Yeah, there you go.
You just can't deny that, and you're a fool if you do. They have risks, and you need to be aware of those risks in order to manage those risks. It's as simple as that. And the big one is the heart. It's the one that we just don't pay enough attention to. And it's the one we should. And I know users that have had heart attacks that are no doubt related to their usage. And I know users that have passed that are no doubt related to the users. And some of them are young. Some of them are in their 20s.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, and then we have... I mean, probably one of the, though, his fans would probably go nuts about me saying this, but Zzz.
Yeah.
The Australian phenomena. You know, I mean, the guy died in a sauna, running DMP with an enlarged heart. So obviously, he had a genetic problem with his heart. No, his heart was enlarged because of his drug use.
Yeah.
You know, you can't keep seeing people passing and keep saying, oh, it's because, so what you're telling me is that everybody that gets into strongman and bodybuilding has a genetic heart enlargement. Do they bollocks? The drugs cause this. So just, if you're aware, you're forewarned, you can be forearmed. It's as simple as that.
There you go. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got some listener questions here that you've posted up. I've got a couple of questions that I thought were interesting we were going to throw in. And if you want to ask any more questions, feel free to ask here on the live feed. Suggestion to anybody who is watching, if you follow us on YouTube, do me a favor, hit the subscribe button. That way you can keep up to date with everything we have coming out. If you enjoy the show, do me a favor and hit the like button. That helps more people to find what we're doing. Over on iTunes, you can leave us a good review. It helps more people to find the show. All right, guys, we'll be back in just a minute. Hey, what is up, guys? First of all, I want to say thanks for listening to another episode of Drugs and Stuff. I've been having a lot of fun with Dave on this program. I feel like we're on a roll. Listen, we're going to take just a really quick break here to shout out our great sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. Third-party tested tons of flavors and just about every kind of protein powder you could possibly think of. TrueNutrition.com is a company that I have trusted. I've got to say, long before they have sponsored the show, I've been using this their products. I know that bodybuilding as we know it has kind of changed this whole worldwide quarantine thing, but listen, you can still reach your goals, and the foundation of that is going to be your nutrition. You've got to keep your protein in, and using a company like True Nutrition's high quality protein, that's going to be an easy way to make sure that you can stay on target. Of course, plus they have all sorts of great health supplements and performance supplements. Guys, check out True Nutrition. Just go to their website, and if you buy anything and you use our code ADVICES, you will also be supporting everything that we do here at the ADVICES Radio Network. So guys, thank you so much for checking out TrueNutrition.com. And once again, please use our code ADVICES. And while I got you here, I want to give a quick shout out to Dave. You like that? Dave Crossland. Guys, Dave is here. This is what, like 51, 52 episodes now that Dave's hung with us and freely shared his education, his thoughts, and his opinions, whether we wanted them or not. If you guys want to check out more of anything that Dave is doing, you can head over to his website, crosslands.org.uk. And we have his other website in the show notes, and you can reach out to him there about COVID-19 testing. All right, guys, let's get back to the show. All right, guys, welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave, with David DeCrossland. I'm Scott McNally. I'm going to find out Dave's middle name one day, and then I'm going to use it against him. What's your middle name, Dave?
I'll tell you now. Stanley.
David Stanley Crossland. I got to write that down.
Good laugh. You know you want to.
Stanley. Well, listen, that poor bloke, that's a word, that poor bloke who passed away, his name was Elvis Aaron Presley O'Brien. He obviously had parents that were big fans of the King.
You can tell, got you. Very. Yeah. My first name was to be Stanley.
Stanley. And then why did they go with David Stanley?
Because it's quite an old name, and my mother felt that it would be a little bit cruel giving me such an old-fashioned name as a first name.
I feel like old names are coming back, though.
But I am named after my grandparents on both sides.
Okay. Your grandma also was named Stanley?
Yes.
Did you tell me? Okay.
So my granddad on my mum's side was Stanley, and his dad was David, and my dad's father was David, and his dad was Stanley.
That's a trip.
That's why. I was going to be called Luke.
Luke?
Yes, because my brothers are called Matthew and Mark, and my dad was called John.
Oh, yeah. All right. We'll get this thing rolling before we get too biblical on the show here.
I'm religious.
We have a bunch of questions. We had some questions. There was now George White. He is a bloke from the UK. He had a couple of questions that he asked it. That's a word, right? Asked it on the Drugs and Stuff podcast. On the what was it? Blood, Sweat, and Gear yesterday. And they were good questions. I wanted to throw them at you, but before we get to that, I'm going to go to our feed here. First of all, do you know who Kerry King is? I don't know Kerry King either. Dave Kallick said, Dave, are you trying to compete with the Kerry King beard game? We don't follow enough stuff to know, do we? I don't know.
I am so ignorant of what goes on around me. It's ridiculous.
Well, shout out to Dave Kallick nonetheless. Killing it over there with his clients in Southern California. We got to get Dave back on one of the shows soon. Okay, here's a question from Walter. He says, what's your thoughts on ECA in a stack in general, fasted during cardio?
Well, I would assume that the ECA is in the stack because they want to reduce their body fat levels.
Right.
It's fine. I mean, it's effectively speed. It's an amphetamine. Form of amphetamine is ephedrine. The only downside to ephedrine is it can be quite habit forming, and it can play havoc with anxiety issues if you have them existingly. But I mean, it's a thermogenic. It increases calorie expenditure. Obviously, got to be concerned or got to be aware of sleep issues. What time of day you take it. Obviously, it can impact recovery if you're taking it too late in the day and then not sleeping.
Sure.
Can be a little bit stressful on the central nervous system. Again, depends on person and quantity taken. So it really is down to the individual. I don't have an issue with the drug per se. I think, though, that it is generally regarded as being quite innocent and quite non-impacting. And actually, it can have quite big impacts on people that are sensitive to stimulants.
It does on me, man. I'm super sensitive to stimulants.
I'm terrible with them.
And I can do better with Clen, and I think it's a half-life thing. And when I've dosed Clen, I don't do it like 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. I've always done it another route, using low doses on a more continual level. But the ECA, on the other hand, man, I'll take that. And then I'm up and down and up and down. And those downs, those crashes just get worse and worse. And if I'm dieted hard, my energy is already low, then it becomes more of a problem than a benefit for me, I found. So I just stay away.
The other problem with that is that tends to fuel usage as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because then you want to take it again, right?
Yeah, because you crash, so it's like, oh, fucking hell, I'll drop another one.
Yeah.
And I've been down that rabbit hole of ending up taking large amounts of ephedrine because you take it, you crash, so you take it. And you've got to remember, the one thing you need to remember with this is that there's no free school meals. And as a result, that increased energy expenditure has to be paid for at some point, and hence why you'll end up very tired. Post-usage, getting that down, getting that crash. If you compensate that crash by extending your use for a longer period of time, then all you're going to start doing is sending yourself catabolic. You're going to increase your cortisol levels. Your stress levels are going to go through the roof. Your sleep pattern is going to get incredibly disrupted.
Sure.
And long-term, and this is more of an abusive situation, but long-term, it can have some very impacting results on your mental well-being.
I could see that.
The only reason I say that is because I'm working with someone at the moment that has severe mental health problems as a result of not just stimulant use, but stimulant use has played a very large role in that.
Huh. Yeah, I could definitely see that. I know one well enough to stay away nowadays. I will say, so what it could be some benefits. I think it is a good fat burner. It does work.
No, deny that.
One benefit I find with ECA over Clen is that I found it has more of a blunting effect on the appetite. So I've used it with people toward the end of a diet, sometimes even at a low, low dose. Like sometimes we don't even add the caffeine, you know, we'll just use just the ephedrine and we'll just do like, you know, a half a tab, like 12.5 milligrams. And just enough to kind of bring that appetite down. Plus, you do get some fat burning effect from 12.5. You know, it's still going to do something, but it helps to suppress that appetite, which, you know, you get to a certain point in the diet. And if you're already super lean and you need to get leaner, it's just you're there's not going to be any comfortable way of doing it. You know what I mean? We've talked about that before, but it can take the edge off.
At the back end of a diet, it can be a lifesaver when it comes to getting through your day.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no denying it has its place. And it's not particularly an evil drug.
Yeah.
A lot of it is down to personal tolerances. You just need to be aware of the knock-on with your sleep and just be careful that you don't start becoming over-reliant. But, those last 2 or 3 weeks when you're hanging out your ass, it can be the night and day of being able to get up and do a day's work. Or of even just being able to get to the gym and getting through it. So they do have their place and they can be very, very useful.
Yeah.
It's definitely not all doom and gloom with them. But I think, unfortunately, they're also generally dismissed as being quite light in the fact of their status as a drug.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they are so readily available. I mean, you can buy them on Facebook, you can buy them on eBay, you can buy them anywhere. You know, they're so easy to get hold of.
Right.
And the truth is, they're probably more impacting than sometimes you give them credit for. So like anything, just give them a bit of respect.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it for sure. This might be off topic. Matt asks this question. He says, this is a quick one. What's Dave's opinion? And I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name. David, and his last name is I-C-K-E. David Ick?
David Icke.
Icke? Who's David Icke? What's your opinion on David Icke?
David Icke is the son of God.
He says Dave's British, so he will get it.
David Icke is the son of God.
What are you talking about? Tell me.
David Icke claims to be the son of God.
He legitimately thinks that, or he says that.
He thinks the moon is a Death Star space station.
Okay.
He thinks the royal family are lizard people. And he's particularly topical at the moment because he has a big theory on 5G and 5G causing the virus and 5G being set up to create population control and brain control and all this sort of stuff. I haven't watched, listened, read anything David Icke has had to say for a very long time, so I am not particularly up to speed on what his current take is with what's going on.
But
generally, I find him a nutter.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. So I'll steer us back to bodybuilding.
You know, nutters have been known to say truthful things as well. So I honestly can't comment because I'm not up to speed on what's currently being said. I have very much avoided all the conspiracy stuff and just not really read into any of it because, to be quite frank, I'm not really that interested.
Is he in the UK, I take it?
I don't know where he is now. He's made himself a lot of money.
But, I mean, is he from the UK?
Yeah, originally, yeah. He's a very rich man.
So he can't live far from you, then. And you guys are a small place. You must know him. You should get him on the show.
There's a few hundred miles, you know. It's not that small a place.
Nothing. That's nothing. You can travel. I did a Google hunt to see if I landed in London, how long it would take to get to your town. And it was only like 4.5 hours, Dave. Get David on the show.
Yes.
I don't care where he is.
You've got to be joking.
I am.
Difficult to comment on the man having not listened to anything he's currently saying. But if I was to look for supporting evidence regarding theories about, or different theories about what's currently happening in the world, he would not be my main source of information.
Fair enough. Back to bodybuilding and back to drugs. The reason that we can't monetize this podcast. another ECA question. I've heard that it's best to run with Clen, 2 days of Clen, then 2 days of ECA and repeat.
That's old school, very old school. The general conception of all that was that Clen receptor sensitivity downgraded quite quickly.
Right.
So you would do a 2 on 2 off. And obviously for those 2 days off, you didn't have a fat burner. So as a result, you'd run ECA as a 2 days off. So you always had some sort of fat burning activity going on.
Okay.
There's nothing detrimental to running that scenario. It's not going to cause any problems, but you don't need the break with Clen. The Clen receptors downregulation has been far greater exaggerated. It isn't really an issue. And so therefore you can run Clen continuously if you want to.
Okay. Okay, I got my questions from George White over here. I'm going to jump in with these. We have a couple more on the feed, so we will get back to those. George White, good UK bloke. He says, Dave didn't even flinch because I sounded so British.
I'm just regretting ever teaching you any British words at all. It's painful.
Dave, I'll see you next Tuesday. Yes. Method for training that has the greatest chance of success. That's a good one, isn't it? This is a generally speaking question.
So basically the best method of training in order to get results.
Basically, yes. Across the board, speaking in a general sense for most people.
I would say the first thing is the training that you can do. And that might sound a bit stupid, but at the end of the day, if you're doing a form of training that you hate, yeah, that you don't want to do, then it's not going to be productive because you're not going to enjoy doing it. You're not going to want to do it. And therefore, most likely is you're not going to do it.
Interesting, because we got this question for Blood, Sweat, and Gear yesterday. And I wanted to bring it here to get your opinion. That's exactly what Scott said as well. So, yeah.
Generally, me and Scott do tend to think on similar lines. I think he's just a much, much, much more technical than I am.
This is a different Scott. This is a Scott. All right. Yeah, Scott S2H. He's our go to drug guy on that show.
Okay. Excuse me. Just get rid of that. So
what was that, Dave?
You cannot argue about professionalism. You are the most unprofessional host on the planet. Yes, exactly.
Peace, Dave. Peace.
So the first thing is, obviously, it's got to be something you want to do, something that you enjoy doing. That is a big aspect.
Yeah.
The second thing would be that your primary goal in eliciting a response, so either be strength or muscle mass or whatever, even endurance, is that you work the muscle. And where one of the most common mistakes, and we hear it all the time, is ego lifting. And basically it means you're moving load without using the muscle as successfully as you could do.
Yeah.
So whatever style of training you choose, you've got to make sure that it is actually engaging the muscle. If you're wanting fitness, then it doesn't matter about engaging the muscle because it's about burning oxygen and about blood flow and cardiac issue, you know, your cardiac system working. But when it comes to stimulating muscular growth or an increase in strength, you have to stimulate the muscle. So in that comes form.
Sure, sure.
But whether that's form in a bodybuilding movement or form in a powerlifting movement doesn't make any difference. The form has to be correct for the exercise and what you're trying to get from it. So first thing is picking something that you enjoy, something that you're going to stick to. The second is executing it correctly. And that sometimes might take a lot more work than you realize. And I think a lot of us are very scared to experiment with training, and you shouldn't be. Take time, play around with movements, play around with grips, play around with tempos and speeds and styles, and see what you feel works best for you, what you feel engages that muscle best for you. And it might be that you use a different style on chest as you do on arms or you do on shoulders. You know, but play around and find what works for you, and then implement that for that body part. And that can take several weeks, even months of experimentation. But so many people expend energy in a gym without stimulating a response in the muscle, and a lot of that's down to the way the form they use. And I'm not talking about, you know, we all know how to do a bench press.
Right.
Yes. But it's about, do you find your chest activating in that bench press? And if you don't, then should you be doing a bench press?
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you, man. Like or a squat,
you
know.
Yeah, or should you be flying, or should you be dumbbell pressing? And if it's an exercise that you have to do because it's part of your discipline,
yeah,
then are you playing around so that you get the maximum out of that lift? And it might be that your technique is slightly unconventional, or it might be that you need to change how you set up and approach that to get that pec to activate in that movement. But if you're training if you're doing an exercise for a body part, the first thing is it stimulating that body part? Do I feel that movement in that body part? So if not, do I have an alternative movement that I do, or can I change the way I do this movement so that I now do feel it?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I think that's important, and that's what I've talked about it before. That's what I had to do with my squats, because it all went to my hips, you know, and my lower back, and I had to completely retrain that in order to squat from my quads, you know, and actually utilize it for a bodybuilding purpose. So, yeah, I guess that would be, you know, what can you do? That would be the answer to what's the best training, you know, setup. I guess that would be it, but. Let's get then, assuming that somebody can master all those things, what split would you say, or type of training would you say would be more beneficial? Say higher volume, or, you know, higher.
I prefer a lower volume but a higher frequency for most people.
Okay.
The times I change from that is if someone has a demanding job or they have difficulty with calorie expenditure. So you in order to grow, you have to be in a calorie excess. If you're training a 3-on-1-off split, which is my most favored split, so okay. You split your body up 3 days, and then you do a 3-on-1-off, so you're training everything twice a week. If you're struggling to eat, then if you can't increase the calorie intake, then you've got to decrease the calorie output. So that would then look at maybe only training 5 days or only training 4 days, or reducing volume and increasing intensity in order to maximize the stimulus of the muscle with the least amount of calorific burn, so you have the most amount of calories left over in order to create growth.
Okay.
So the first thing is stimulate it. The second thing is feed it and recover it. So the most progressive and productive training is going to be the one that stimulates the muscle. And then it's obviously enough food and calories to then allow that muscle to recover and grow, to move on again and repeat the process.
But
split wise, I think you just also got to be realistic about what you can perform and what you're able to perform. I've never trained legs ever as a workout. I've always split them. I've always done quads, hamstrings, and calves on separate days. Always. Because I was never capable of doing hamstrings effectively after I trained quads.
I can see that.
Effectively after I trained hamstrings. It wasn't there.
I can see that.
So I've always split legs.
Oh, here's an interesting one. Go back to the questions we had on the thread. How could someone reverse the effects of steroids, especially trenbolone? Dave said that its effects on the brain are permanent. What do you think of ibogaine? Could it reverse those effects by resensitizing all the receptors in the brain? How much time it takes to get the brain side effects from, and oh wait, how much time it takes to get the brain side effects from steroids. So I guess starting out, are you familiar with ibogaine?
No, never heard of it.
It's a psychedelic drug. Right. Like ayahuasca, you know, people are having these experiences, you know, to kind of, and they're being used in a therapeutic sense. There's almost been a rebirth of psychedelics, including even like low dose of, you know, psilocybin, magic mushrooms, even low dose LSD. Yeah. And they're doing this in micro dosing in some cases. Yeah. And then they're doing these bigger experiments with, you know, things like ibogaine and ayahuasca, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'm not very familiar personally, but do you think there is a medicinal side? I guess I'll ask you that.
I don't know, is the honest answer, because I don't know enough about the compounds that we're discussing to know how positively impacting they can be. I've seen bits, and I've heard people claim, but the problem is there's a very thin line between stimulation and degradation in these sort of compounds. And though you can have a stimulating effect, you don't always realize the long-term negative effect it's having because you're constantly relying on the stimulating effects of the drug.
That makes sense, sure.
Now, with steroids impacting the brain, my current knowledge would say that the changes are permanent. The cellular damage is permanent and non-recoverable. Hmm. That doesn't mean you can't adapt and work around certain problems. So most people that get anxiety, to a large extent, will have anxiety for the rest of their life. They just learn how to cope with it and reduce triggers and find ways of working around it to stop anxiety becoming a dominating factor in their lives.
Okay.
Rather than they fix the problem with anxiety. And I think that's very much the situation with drug use and its recovery, is that from what I've seen, the damage is permanent, but you are able to adapt and offset the impact of that damage to some degree, though never fully.
Okay.
And there are certain things that will help because they'll make the other aspects of your brain more efficient and some compensatory effects there. So ashwagandha is a product, and lion's mane is particularly good at helping with brain function, but it has to be taken continuously and developed and built up in the system over time. And things like this can definitely aid your cognitive function, but it's more a case of making other areas work more efficiently than it is a case of fixing what's been damaged by the drugs you've used.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
So it's like long-term marijuana use damages the theandamine receptor.
Okay.
Eventually it gets to the point where the andamine receptor just doesn't work properly anymore, and andamine will not trigger that receptor.
And what does that mean to me? Like,
it's part of our flight or fight response. So what helps us calm down and cope with stress is the release of andamine. Andamine goes into the receptor, it calms us down, it chills us out. Marijuana fits the same receptor, that's why it calms us down, chills us out, but it does over term damage the receptor. Huh. And desensitize the receptor. The issue then is your own andamine can no longer calm you down or chill you out. And so this is why you see heavy, long-term weed smokers becoming paranoid.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Because the natural mechanism to keep them calm is just broken.
What's that called again? How do you spell that? Thandamine or andamine?
Andamine. A-N-A.
Okay.
So the long-term result is your natural calming mechanism is broken.
Yeah.
Now, the result then is that you need weed to control the situation.
Yeah.
Because now it's the only thing that will control the situation. And this is, you'll see this quite often in long-term weed smokers, that they'll say that they do get stressed and they do suffer from anxiety.
Yeah, yeah.
But a bit of weed sorts it out.
Yep. I've been there, man. Never I was, that was me in, at one point in my life. I've lived that, yeah. You know?
And then they don't actually trigger or realize that what you're actually doing is just it continuing the cycle of damage.
Yeah,
Because
I think I initially used marijuana as a way to cope with stress and, all of that, self-medicate. But I do believe that those issues were later made worse for me personally. I can't say this is going to happen to everyone, but I will say that's what you're talking about sounds like my experience.
There is a peptide. It's a psychopep. I believe it's Russian.
Is that a
And
band?
I.
Psychopep?
Yes.
I thought I heard them before. They're out of the UK. They're good. Good blokes.
Shut up, you pillock.
Pillock. Pillock.
Make a note of that one
Okay.
in your little book of phrases to say.
Pillock.
But it has been used to aid people with who are trying to stop smoking weed and with weed withdrawal. But I can't remember off the top of my head what it is. I'll have to go some digging.
Okay, let's make note here. Let's talk about that on the next one. I'll dive in here, see if we can find. I think we had a couple more. Jeff Baker, thank you very much. He says Kerry King is a guitar player for a band you may not have heard of, Dave. They're called Slayer. Just to let you know. You
I
probably
have heard of Slayer.
haven't heard of Slayer. They're not
I
you.
have heard of Slayer.
You don't even know what that is. You're
I
lying to me
do.
right now.
No, I'm not. I had friends at school that were into their thrash metal. I am aware of Slayer. I am also aware of Napalm Death.
Oh, you're going deep
Ah,
now. A
see?
little deeper. That was a step
Yeah.
deeper. I figured you knew Slayer. If you can't get a hold of any PCT, due to everything that's going on, should someone just taper off a cycle slowly or go to a TRT dose until things are back to normal and they can get PCT meds?
I would rather go TRT.
Yeah.
I
I think if you're in the US, I'm going to tell you to go to. We have a sponsor for Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, pureroz.co. Use the code NERDS. They're a research site that carries that stuff. Just throw that out there. But other than that, I mean, given that somebody was stuck, you would prefer they were on a PCT or excuse me, a TRT.
There are people that do recover to some degree. I have seen it. I have seen people recover with no PCT. It's not impossible. You could always taper. And the thing is, I don't see the point in elongating a taper particularly long time because the half-life gives you a natural taper to a large degree anyway.
Yeah.
So unless you were on particularly high doses, which would mean that the initial part would be quite a rapid drop because your taper line tends to go quite steep and then starts to pan out towards the bottom end of it. Otherwise, I wouldn't see a taper was particularly necessary. You can give it a go with the knowledge that if you're not recovering, you can always jump on TRT. I mean, I suppose the big issue at the moment is we just don't know how long this is going on for,
Yeah, that's true.
which makes things difficult. Most people seem to think that we're going to be coming out of a lockdown sometime into May, possibly into June, but the life won't actually get back to normal until sometime next year.
Okay.
And a lot of that depends on whether we have a resurgence of this problem come flu season at the back end of this year, which I think a lot of people are forgetting about. It may come back. So, it is a difficult one to call. By all means, try it. You'll soon know if it's not working because you'll feel like shit. And it's very quick and easy then to administer TRT. But obviously, most postal blood testing services are still working.
Yeah.
So it is not impossible to get bloods done and see where you are at.
Okay. I'll go with one more here, and then we will call it a day. This is from Juan. He says, best stack to combat anxiety in the feeling of impending doom, on the back of my in the back of my head. Also not getting any sleep. So I'm going to guess this is quarantine related, you know?
Well, it could be, or it could be back to the conversation we've just had about brain damage from steroid use.
Ooh. Let's go with quarantine.
I mean, one of the things that the problem is with the impacts of long-term steroid use in the brain is that, you know, your coping mechanisms you start to struggle with, and this is why you start getting anxiety and stuff like this. There's impacts on dopamine receptors, and there's impact on dopamine response, and, you know, neurons are excited. That's how our brains work.
Yeah.
And dopamine then basically puts a lid on the neurons so they don't get too excited. If your dopamine is low, or your dopamine transport isn't working properly, which is a side effect of steroid use, or your dopamine receptor's been interrupted, again, a side effect from steroid use, then you can't put the lid on those neurons and they get overexcited, which is why we get anxiety, or part of the mechanism of getting anxiety and stress and worry and stuff like this.
Hmm.
So, you know, those are symptoms of anxiety. Modern life causes anxiety, unfortunately. Social media is particularly bad for causing anxiety. So it is difficult to I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, that's because you use steroids, because it may have no implication whatsoever. But if you are like that, then any cycle is not going to be particularly beneficial.
I think he's just thinking of supplements, you know? He's thinking of, like, what kind of supplements could he stack for anxiety?
If he's talking about supplements, then yeah. I would look at Strom Sports Neuro.
Yeah.
Particularly good. Ashwagandha, particularly good. Lion's Mane, particularly good. They will all help with anxiety.
Okay.
I'm just making sure stuff like vitamin B, vitamin D, vitamin C are all where they need to be, particularly vitamin D. Vitamin D can have quite impacts
Huge.
On depression and mood and such like. I mean, it's one of the reasons why you get SADS, seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah, yeah.
Is because of low vitamin D, because you're not exposed to sunlight. So vitamin D is a crucial vitamin in that side. Also, look at your thyroid. Make sure your thyroid production is in balance, because if your T3 to T4 is out of whack, that's going to have a huge impact on anxiety and depression and mood as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, if we're talking subs wise, then they would be the ones I'd be looking at. I mean, I swear by that Neuro. I think it's pretty much one of the best supplements ever produced.
Hmm.
And it's, I wouldn't say I suffer with anxiety, because I don't, but I do suffer with monkey mind particularly badly. And I have definitely seen a change in my general mood due to my long-term steroid use, without a doubt.
Really?
Yeah. And I find Neuro is just a very nice, not super invasive supplement that just keeps things in a very nice level and keeps me functional. Also, say more efficient and functional than I would have been otherwise.
People had experimented with the lithium, is it Ornate? It's mm-hmm. it's an over-the-counter available form of lithium. A couple years ago, it was pretty popular in some of the sects of bodybuilding that I hang out in. Guys were experimenting with it back in like 2018, and some people were getting really good benefits from it, taking a low dose of it. I've heard mixed reviews on using it, but there have been people that have had a lot of success with it. So, I mean, I'll throw that out there. And Lion's Mane, they don't quite know how it works, but I've heard similar stuff that it could be very beneficial. It'd be worth investigating at least.
It needs to be long term though. You need to be consistent with it, and yeah. I would suggest twice a day, daily. Yeah. Okay. So you're not gonna take it once and feel amazing. But and that's the thing with the Lion's Mane Natural. It's not going to be a night and day experience. It's going to be something that you'll take it for 2-3 weeks, and then you'll just start to dawn. Actually, I'm not as bad as I used to be. I actually feel a bit better. I'm actually coping a lot better.
Yeah.
And just also looking at reassessing your approach.
I like that. Yeah, because I was thinking of that too. It's, I mean,
you know, about how you cope with situations and how you cope with problems. I mean, lockdown, for example, structure's massively important. So getting up and routine and doing things is massively important in keeping your brain comfortable.
Yeah.
But just, you know, how you approach problems and look at different ways of dealing with problems and problem management. And there's quite a lot of self-help stuff online. in enhanced thinking, or how you program your brain to think certain ways so that you don't dwell on the things that you can't deal with, and you focus more on the positive things that you can do something about. We all cope with stress much better if we're positively working towards getting rid of it.
Yeah.
You know, all problems are much better cope with if we're working towards solving the problem in one way or another, you know. So if you've got money worries, you worry less about money when you're at work than you do when you're not at work.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when you're at work, you know you're contributing to fixing the problem.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. I think
so
that
things like that.
The mental side is huge, I think. You know, I think it really is, because even if you take somebody who has like depression or something, they give them an antidepressant, it's the people that do therapy with it that are going to be, you know, the most successful. I mean, and realistically, I mean, I'm not a therapist, but we're all dealing with something right now. You know what I mean? Like, all of us are going through this thing, and I don't say that to make his feelings any less valid. I guess what I'm saying is that we are all definitely struggling right now. He's not alone. And that, you know, I think we're all in our own places with it too. We're all going through our own, I guess, levels of understanding and acceptance. And I think that for me, one of the big things is just being able to continue staying appreciative for what I have and grateful for what I do have right now. You know, it's made a big difference for me. And when I do get a little unwound, which has happened a few days ago, Thursday, Friday, I was feeling pretty down last week, Dave. And I actually needed to like kind of unplug and step back for a minute. And then by Sunday, you know, I was coming back around and now I'm feeling pretty good again. I'm going to ride that. But I had to step back, reevaluate, and look at, like I said, man, I got to be appreciative, because we still are lucky. You know, a lot of us are. I'm lucky I can hang out here and talk with you now. I have food in my refrigerator. You know, there's a lot of great things that are in my life still.
It could always be worse. And that sounds very cliche, and for a lot of people, well, yeah, maybe it could be, but, you know, I'm still, you're not. But when you look at something negatively, it will always stay a negative.
Sure.
The only way to get out of that mindset is to look for the positives.
Absolutely.
And sometimes they're hard to find. And it may just be because of state of mind, but sometimes they are very hard to find. And yeah, you know, the bloke next door may have no legs and be in a wheelchair, and his mum may just have died and this, that, and the other. And he may be much worse, but it's like, well, that doesn't make me feel any better, because I still feel like shit.
Right.
So, you know, looking at people that are worse off is not always a positive thing to do. But you've just got to try and find positivities in where you are. And a lot of that comes from being positive or doing something positive. And to do something positive, you first have to do something.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing we have when we get overwhelmed with anxiety and depression is that we stop doing.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. All right, well, let's get out of here. There were a couple more questions. Guys, we're out of time today. We'll pick those up. I'll save these questions. So if you ask these, we will cover them. We record this every Tuesday at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. We'll probably be on about that same time next week. You can tune in for that, or, you know, tune in to us either at advicesradio.com for the audio. You can search Advices Radio on your favorite podcast app, or go to YouTube and check out Think Big Bodybuilding Media. Dave, how's everything going with the COVID tests and stuff?
Quiet. We've finally got his last delivery in, so we've just finalized all outstanding orders today. Otherwise it's quiet. There's a lot of mixed media about the tests, and all we've tried to do is offer the best tests we could find.
Sure.
If we are made aware that these tests aren't good at what they do, then obviously we will get rid of them and try and find ones that are.
Yeah.
But at the moment, we feel we've got the two market leaders. One of them's just been picked up by Spain nationally, and the same one's also been picked up by Holland nationally. But at the moment, because of the climate, people's fears, lack of money, I understand all that at the end of the day, you know. Yeah. And the idea with the test was to basically a rescue line for us financially, and then we decided that once we'd met what we needed to meet financially to cover our commitments, anything extra was going to be donated to the NHS anyway. So what we do is, for every order we get, we generally give a fifth or a quarter of it to the NHS in tests.
That's cool, man. That's cool.
So, I mean, people might think this is bullshit. Well, it's up to you if you do or not. I don't really give a shit anymore, to be quite honest. But it genuinely had sleepless nights over, is this profiteering? You know, yeah. And I came to the conclusion that the prices are market reflective because of what we have to pay for the tests.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, all we're trying to do is cover our bills. Once our bills are covered, I don't give a shit after that point. The money can go to anybody.
All right. And as before, we'll have the link down in the show notes if you guys want to check that out.
All the information we have on the test is on the website. If we get any more information, it will go on the website. Like I say, we're just trying to offer the best ones we can find. If that changes, we'll let you know. And obviously, we'll change the website to suit.
Excellent. So, what do you say we get out of here, you pillock?
Look, Scott, there's no point using English words if you can't fucking pronounce them properly. Pillock.
Pillock, that's pillock. What I said. Pillock.
No, pillock.
Pillock.
Ick. Pillock. Not ock. Ick. Yes.
Pillock.
It's not Hampshire. It's Hampshire. It's not Yorkshire. It's Yorkshire.
Yorkshire. That's what I just said.
No, sure. Yorkshire.
That's what I said. Yorkshire.
No, sure. Not Shire.
That's what
sure.
I said. Like, I said Shire.
Like the old singer. Sure.
Not Shire. Shire.
No, you're not in fucking Bilbo Baggins land. Sure. Yorkshire. Sure.
Shire.
No.
All right, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff, thanks for hanging out with us. We'll see you next time.